I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high and canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto. Winston,
good evening, Vashon Island. This is the Cats and Jammer Follies, and I am Megan Hastings. And this is a travel story show. Today we have one of my oldest and dearest, bestest friends on. Her name is Mary Dominus, and she and I and her sister all grew up together in Chicago about 1,000 years ago. We ourselves have done a lot of traveling together, both as youth and as an adult. And Mary has written a couple stories to share with us today. Mary, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks, Meg. I'm a little nervous.
Don't be nervous. You have beautiful stories and everyone's going to love them, especially me. I get to hear them read for the first time by you.
Yeah, that's the part that's a little nerve-wracking. Writing them is not so hard. It's the saying the words out loud sometimes that is a little challenging.
Well, I've got faith in you. I know you can do it. tell us a little bit about the first story.
Okay, the first story is just a little bit, it's like a recount of the many, many trips that we took as kids with our parents and sometimes with our dad alone to Florida. Our grandparents they immigrated from Croatia, and they lived in Chicago most of their 5 or 6 years, first years that they got here, and then they bought homes in the Keys of Florida.
Well, after going through Chicago winter, could you blame them?
Yeah, for sure. And so we ended up spending a lot of time driving down there to visit them in Siesta Key, Florida, near Sarasota.
Awesome. Well, if you want to start reading your story, I can't wait to hear it.
All right. So this one is called Love in the Florida Keys. When I was young, my parents took our family on several road trips across the country. It was cheaper to drive than to fly, especially with several kids. So we loaded up the car and off we went. Florida was where we traveled to most often. My grandparents lived in the Keys, so we headed south. It took us 2 days, although it can easily be done in one. My dad said that Chattanooga, Tennessee, was the halfway point for us, so this is where we always stopped for the night. There were several things about this drive that I will never forget. Heading south out of Chicago, especially in the cooler months of the year, was a lesson in the changing weather conditions. As the further south we got, the hotter and wetter everything became. We stuck to the vinyl car seats in a most uncomfortable way, and our long hair stuck to our faces and necks. Another marked difference was the bugs. Our apartment cockroaches, that seemed to be the boldest, biggest, most disgusting bugs we knew of, had nothing on these southern gems. These southern cousins of all sorts seemed to get louder and bigger, screaming at us at every gas station and rest stop, possibly a verbal assault of vengeance for all the bug carcasses on the front of our car. Pulling into rest stops at night was particularly bad, and I remember that on several occasions we were frightened to leave the car as huge cicadas flew in what seemed like no particular direction, just everywhere, including right at us. The moths were the size of our small fists, and they too seemed determined to land on us. The bathrooms were every little girl's nightmare, consisting of a mess of spiders, crawling and flying insects of all sorts, both dead and alive. When my father took us to Florida alone, these stops posed a challenge, as he did not want to accompany us into the women's restroom, and we did not want to go alone. We cried near hysterics, but our bladders went out to our fear. Keep your heads down, do your business, and get out, my father would say. I repeated those words in my head as I went in, sometimes pushing past my sisters, who seemed to be going too slow, holding on to each other and shuffling in. Keep your head down, do your business, and get out. Keep your head down, do your business, and get out, I'd say. Besides the bugs, though, I loved pulling into various gas stations on our route and feeling the warmth and the humidity creeping in stronger state by state. Hearing the southern accents of the female cash register attendants and the local customers was exciting and funny, as they would call me darling or sugar. No gas station stops seemed to happen without the sisters whining for sweets. And the further from home we got, the candy seemed to get stickier and more colorful. We all knew this meant that we were getting closer to our destination. The way everything smelled also changed as we made our way south. Chicago always smelled thick with dirt and pollution. Indiana was worse with a chemical flare added. Kentucky smelled like flowers and manure, and Tennessee smelled earthy in a heavy sort of way. Georgia was often so hot that the smell was sometimes hard to perceive, but it had a fruity and floral headiness to it. Florida, though, smelled the best of all, salty ocean mixed with the incredible sweetness of orange blossoms. Besides the destination, driving into Tennessee as the day turned to night was one of my favorite things about this trip. The mountains were so incredibly high, and in the daylight, I remember sitting by the window in the back seat of the car, straining my head back as far as I could to try to get a view of the tops of the mountains. And somehow, no matter how hard I tried, they were just too high. As the night moved in, they became these giant shapes that seemed like they could crush us. As the sun set, they went from greens and browns to dark shadows. The energy they gave off was powerful and perceptible, even for a young child. By the time we would get to our hotel, it was pitch dark. Our dad would leave us in the car in the hotel driveway, half asleep, as he would go into the reception area to get us a room. As we sat waiting, we listened to the sweet melodies sung by random country western musicians on the radio. Our favorite at the time was Dolly Parton and her Coats of Many Colors. After a few minutes, our dad would return with a large orange or green plastic key tag with our room number stamped on it in gold. We would drive around to the back to get as close to our room as possible. If we had a ground floor room, my dad was happy. If we had a second or third floor room, he was pissed, and he would mutter loudly under his breath about having to carry all of our stuff up flights of stairs. Even after driving nearly 12 hours and over 600 miles with three whiny kids in the back seat, once we parked, our father's work was not done. He had at least another 20 minutes of tasks to complete before his head could hit the pillow. First, he would carry the sleeping sister or sisters into the room, and then he would come back out for the rest of us. Our bags were next, and the giant forest green metal cooler was last. He always left the cooler just outside the door to drain it before he refilled it with ice from the machine under the hotel stairs. My father was a hard worker and an early riser. He craved the ocean and sand, and he did his best to get us to our grandparents as soon as possible. I remember that on those trips, he would wake us before any of us were ready. He would be dressed and the car would be nearly packed to go, all except for the sisters. We complained, but we were excited for the ocean and Grandma Josephine's cooking. Walking out of the room, the cool morning mountain air with the sun barely rising brought a new view of these majestic mountains all around us, including those of the Appalachian Trail and the Great Smoky Mountains. The fog was thick and lingering, but the sun was working hard to burn it off. Reading the Smoky Mountains has always felt like finding an old familiar friend whom you've missed terribly but didn't realize it. Breakfast was a treat on the road, and in this part of the country, it meant a stop at the local Waffle House, where the waitresses all wore matching brown, beige, and some strange shade of orange, and were hard-pressed to put down their cigarette to take your order. In fact, if you didn't smoke, you may as well have for your time at the Waffle House. Everyone seemed to be smoking, coughing, and talking loudly with a heavy accent that made them sound like they were speaking another language, and they kind of were. The smell of cigarettes, coffee, and maple syrup was thick, and it hung on our clothes and in our hair for hours. We left with a smile on our faces and bellies full on waffles and pork sausage. To pass the time on the road, my dad entertained us with various games, like naming the capitals of every state, telling us riddles and stories. My dad seemed to have all the fairy tales by Hans Christian Andersen and the Brothers Grimm memorized, and we loved them. The darker the tale, the better. We had a radio, but it was often hard to find a station. When we did, though, my dad would sing along, and we loved hearing his deep voice singing the hits of ABBA, Carole King, Cat Stevens, and more. Sometimes we all sang along in a loud, off-key rendition of whatever was on. To us, it was the best sound ever. We stopped at rest stops more than my dad would like, since little girls never have to go when you are near a restroom, and then suddenly must go, as my dad put it, once you're finally making good time. The Welcome to Florida rest stop at the Florida State Line was our absolute favorite. They served fresh squeezed orange juice. And no matter how many times my dad warned us to not be greedy, we just couldn't help ourselves, consuming up to 10 little Dixie cups each. They also had a playground with a huge merry-go-round that was designed and painted to look like an orange. Unfortunately, we always seemed to visit the merry-go-round after we gluttonously ravaged the juice. This delayed our departure on several occasions, as one or all of us would end up vomiting orange juice all over the merry-go-round or on the grass nearby. And yet, this was always our favorite stop. We eventually learned not to drink as much before jumping on the merry-go-round. Our drive from the state line to our grandparents' home took another 5 to 6 hours, depending on stops for gas and tea breaks, which, again, the sisters almost never synchronized. Since we had already been on the road this long after leaving the Waffle House, this was the roughest part of our drive. The weather at this point was usually very hot and humid, and we had no air conditioning, or my dad would not run it in order to save gas. This meant that we whined more, fought more, and were a tangled mess of windblown long hair and hot faces. My dad tried to entertain us, but with all the windows down, we couldn't hear half of what he said, and he was just as tired and over the drive as we were. During our last stop for gas, my dad would always go to the payphone and call my grandparents to give them our arrival time. Then we would finish the drive in near silence as everyone was beyond spent. It wasn't until we crossed over the Sarasota Bay Bridge, taking us into Siesta Key, that we started to feel excited again in anticipation of seeing our grandparents. The water at this point was like the mountains in Tennessee. It was dark and expansive and as frightening as it was thrilling. On the final stretch down Midnight Pass Road, we passed the bright lights of the local 7-Eleven Mart, where we would walk with our grandmother at least twice a week for a gallon of fudge ice cream. As we turned onto our street, we all sat up and began jockeying to be the first out of our car. As our car pulled into our grandparents' driveway, their front door flew open, and it seemed as if they were also jockeying to be the first to greet us. Squealing with excitement, the sisters jumped from the car before it was at a complete stop, and we rushed into the arms of our grandparents. We didn't feel this way about arriving anywhere else. For us, this place was more than just our grandparents' house. It was home, in the sense of the most warmest, loving embrace that one could imagine. It was safety and security. It was filled with stories that connected us to our heritage. It was a place we felt unconditionally loved. Love changes people, and it helps us to trust and be brave. And this love that we found here in the Florida Keys, no matter what happened,
back through the years, I go wandering once again, back to the seasons of my youth. I recall a box of rags that someone gave us, and how my mama put the rags to use. There were rags of many colors, every piece was small, and I didn't have a coat, and it was way down in the fall. Mama sewed the rags together, so in every piece with love, she made my coat of many colors that I was so proud of. As she sewed, she told a story from the Bible she had read about a coat of many colors Joseph wore, and then she said, perhaps this coat will bring you good luck and happiness. And I just couldn't wait to wear it, and Mama blessed it with a kiss.
Mary, that was so beautiful, so lovely. Your descriptions are so spot on. I feel like I literally was with you, smelling the coffee smoke and the maple syrup.
Do you remember those waffle houses?
Oh, I do, with the rotating like pies that are wrapped up in saran wrap. Yeah. Be hard to forget them. And those waitresses. I do miss that kind of a uniform.
Yeah, well, I think you can visit any, what are they in Chicago? They still have those restaurants in Chicago, the pie houses. And I think they still dress in sort of uniform, you know, colors.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of them. Yeah, there's, I don't know anything like that in Seattle, but yeah, I'm glad to have known them in my life.
Yeah, the Golden Nugget.
Oh, yeah, the Golden Nugget. Oh, God. Yeah, I do remember it. And I just want to say on a note about your dad, who has no longer in this earthly form, but he was an amazing man. And not only did he have all you ladies, but he had me, too.
Yes, you were his other daughter.
I know. Well, let's hear your other story, Mary.
Okay, this one is called Betty. I remember how the hot ground felt on my back, how the little pieces of gravel scraped against my tender skin. The intense heat was all around us as I lay under the car. I felt the sweltering wind move over my body as the speeding cars passed by, causing our car to shake above me. After our parents' divorce, my mom got to keep the family car, and it seemed that traveling was a new way of life for us. It felt as if we were always leaving and never really arriving. We moved constantly, changed schools almost every year, and never really settled anywhere. By the time I graduated high school, I had attended 9 different schools. As kids, we were always wondering when the next getaway would be. On a weekend, during a school day, in the middle of the night, would we have time to grab our favorite things, fill our pillowcase with odds and ends? At one point, our mom decided to move us to Los Angeles, so we packed up everything we owned into our family car, affectionately known as Betty. She was a 4-door light green 1970 Chevy Impala. An entire family could sit comfortably in her trunk. Her front and rear bench seats could fit up to 5 people, and seatbelts were optional. We left Chicago in the summer of 1976. Air conditioning was a luxury we did not have. So we sped down the freeway, headed to the City of Angels. We had all 4 windows down, blowing the hot summer air in on us. As it was, on so many other road trips, our long hair was a tangled mess, our faces were as red as beet, and our ears burned with a loud wind whipping through the car. In an effort to save money on renting a trailer, our mother came home and came up with an ingenious idea to put all of our clothes and soft items like stuffed animals, towels, and bedding into 50-gallon garbage bags, which we stuffed on the floors behind the front seat. Once the space was filled, we used an extra blanket to lay across the top to make a huge bed in the back. Our mother was barely 5'1", so the front seat was pulled as far forward as it could go, leaving us enough room to create a king-size bed, and we were giddy with excitement. Betty was good to us until we reached Oklahoma. As we barreled down the freeway, Mom said something didn't feel right, and the sound of our car had gotten much louder. We had truck drivers honking and pointing at our car. My sisters and I were thrilled to think they were honking for us, but in fact, they were trying to warn us of trouble. Mom finally got the message and pulled over onto the shoulder where she got out to investigate. She yelled strict orders at us that no one was to open any doors. Mom walked slowly around the front of the car and then went to the back and knelt down on the ground to check things out. She was down there so long that I finally climbed out the rear window so as not to open any doors. I found her sitting on the ground behind the car crying. This scared me, but I was the caretaker of the bunch, so I knelt next to her and I asked her why she was crying. She told me the muffler was broken, that it was hanging off, and we couldn't go anywhere until we fixed it. I had no idea what a muffler was, but I asked her how to fix it anyway, and this made her cry a little more while she admitted that she had no idea what to do. She said it cannot drag on the ground, so I suggested we use a rope to tie it up. And she said that even though this was a good idea, it wouldn't work because the rope might catch fire. After a few minutes, she stopped crying and went to the trunk and pulled out a metal hanger and began untangling it and bending it this way and that. As I watched what she was doing, I started to understand her plan. We bent this thing into the shape of a hook that we thought might do the trick. The muffler was too hot to handle. We sat there in the full sun of midday to give it time to cool off. We were tired, we were thirsty and cranky, but none of this kept us from entertaining ourselves by singing the hits of the day. Our favorite at the time was the Hughes Corporation Rock the Boat, which we now bellowed out at full volume. Our love is like a ship on the ocean. We've been sailing with a cargo full of love and devotion. So I'd like to know where you got the notion. Said I'd like to know where you got the notion. To rock the boat, don't rock the boat, baby. Rock the boat, don't tip the boat over. Rock the boat, don't rock the boat, baby. Rock the boat. After an hour or so, it was time for us to fix our car and be on our way. The sisters had to pee, and we needed to get something to drink as we were fading in the heat of the day. I lay on my back on the hot gravel and shimmied my way under the car with my 9-year-old hands wrapped in T-shirts to protect them in case the muffler was still too hot. I'm not quite sure how I managed to pick up this muffler that weighed as much as I did and was probably longer than I was tall, but I did it. I took the hanger from my mom's hands and tied the muffler to the bottom of the car. As the cars on this highway blew past, kicking hot dust and gravel in my eyes and stinging my bare legs, I may have sworn a few times in Croatian, like my father often did when he did not want us to know what he was saying, but Mom didn't seem to notice. When I shimmied out from under the car, my mom hugged me and dusted me off. I climbed back through the backseat window into the now stifling car. Mom invited me to sit up front with her, which got my sisters complaining about how unfair they thought it was that I now got to sit in the ever-coveted spot up front. But Mom said I was the brave one who fixed the car, and that was why. That night, when we pulled off to sleep at a rest stop somewhere near the New Mexican border, Mom bought me a candy bar from the vending machine that was surrounded by a swarm of moths whose lights kept flickering. She said it was a reward for helping her that day. As I lay in the back seat on our king-size garbage bag bed, sweating and eating that old dry candy bar, I knew that somehow we would be okay.
So I'd like to know when you got the notion. Said I'd like to know when you got the notion. To rock the boat,
don't rock the boat, baby.
Rock the boat,
don't tip the boat over.
Rock the boat,
don't rock the boat, baby.
You love me, yeah. Your touch has thrilled me like the rush of the wind, and your arms have held me safe from a rolling sea. There's always been a quiet place to harbor you and me.
Thank you so much, Mary, for sharing that story. And I also would like to say thank you for singing. And if anybody's curious, Mary used to be in a band called Boy King back in the day in Chicago in the 90s.
And that's probably why we're not around anymore.
No, get out of here. You guys were fun to watch when it was Boy King, that's for sure. Mary, I want to say thank you so much for coming on the show and taking the time to write these beautiful tales from your childhood and your past and Lenny and everybody.
No worries. It was my pleasure, actually. Easier than I thought.
Well, write some more and we'll have you on again.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Mary. Love you, Mimi.
Love you, too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I've been everywhere.
Thank you so much, Vashon. This is Megan Hastings, and this is the Cats and Jammer Follies. Have a nice night.